So with us today is E*TRADE's Chief Executive Officer, Carl Rossner. Carl was appointed CEO in 2016, and under his leadership, E*TRADE has substantially increased its earnings profile. The company has undertaken two strategic acquisitions. They've returned over $1 billion in shareholder equity in the form of share repurchases, and in the most recent quarter, put in place the company's first quarterly dividend. So today, join me in welcoming Carl. Today's presentation will be fireside chat. So Carl, on the 3Q call, you laid out new growth objectives through 2023 around EPS growth, operating margin, capital distribution, and ROE. So can you talk about how you landed on these four goals, and how did you pick up on that five-year horizon?
Sure. So thank you, Will, for having us here, and thanks for picking up coverage of E*TRADE. We greatly appreciate Goldman and all you guys do. So happy to be here today. In terms of where we are from announcing the five-year sort of strategic plan that we've just come out with, that's really a byproduct of our own internal capital and strategic planning that we go through on an annual basis with our board and talk through where we see the business headed and what we believe we can deliver for our shareholders over the course of time, primarily related just to our core brokerage business and our stock plan administration business at this point. And when we looked at the results that we had from the plan that we put together, it was quite a bit of value that we believe we're able to deliver over the next 5 years. And we've been pretty transparent as a management team and as a company in terms of sharing those views and sharing our results with our shareholder base, with our investors, and with you all on the sell side and other community. So we were, in the spirit of transparency, wanted to share those numbers. And really, it's not necessarily goals. It's showing the power that we believe that E*TRADE and the growth that E*TRADE can deliver on financial metrics, right? Moving away from just business metrics or results that may not necessarily show the clear picture of what we're driving at from a financial performance perspective. So we've, in the four categories that you just talked about, on earnings per share growth, we believe that by 2023, we can deliver in excess of $7 a share in EPS just based on our current model, not using any sort of heroic assumptions or building out anything that would be out of the ordinary. So again, driving from our core business and from stock plan administration. So we do believe there's some upside to that $7 per share in the model. When you look at the operating margin, the op margin that we've announced in terms of the checkpoint of 2020 being at 50% and thereafter delivering more than that, what we've used in our budgeting process for quite some time now is an operating margin framework. And that op margin framework has kept us extremely disciplined on expense growth and also on our capital return programs. So we believe that we can be industry best in this space on the op margin, just given the way that our model is built. We don't have a heavy footprint. We are extremely digitally centric, and we believe that we can deliver in excess of what most of our peers can on that front. So that's where the 50-plus comes from. In terms of our capital policy and what we've done, in the past, I mean, we generate quite a great deal of free cash flow and drop that to the bottom line. And we've been rather episodic in our delivery of cash flow over the past couple of years, and that was just from where the business was, right? What we were going through from a regulatory perspective, what we had to come through from just the capital levels that we were able to, that we had to maintain for our regulators, the dividend approvals we used to have to get. So it was very episodic. So we think announcing a real capital return plan where we talk about delivering in excess of 80% of our bottom line back to our shareholders through our first dividend and also through another $1 billion buyback plan was absolutely the right thing to do. And we'll continue to maintain focus on that capital plan and continue to view everything that we do through the capital usage lens that we have. When you look at ROE as a target, we think that's the sort of culmination or the summation of those first 3 points. And getting to in excess of 20% on the ROE line, I think delivers substantial value to our shareholders. And when you couple that with mid-teens sort of earnings growth, we think we're in a very good place for the future. And when we looked at the plan and the amount of value that we believe it can deliver to shareholders over time, we're quite happy with where we are. Again, we think there's upside.
Great. Maybe on that topic, when you look out at some of the more environmental factors that are external to the company, so whether it's rates, the trading environment, pricing, competition, how do you think about handicapping some of the risks to that plan, and where do you see opportunities to on the other side, maybe outperform or offset any of those risks if they occur?
Sure. I think it's important to look at, when we talk about whether it be opportunities or risks, it's important just to understand how we put the five-year plan together, and really the assumptions that we used. Like I said a little bit earlier, we didn't use heroic assumptions or things that were outside of the ordinary. Interest rates, for example, we used the forward curve at the time that we put the plan in place. So two hikes in 2019, one in 2020. We kept our cash balances and customer accounts steady at 13% of their assets, which is historical lows. We looked at some modest customer activity improvement, and then the markets we held at about a 5% growth rate on an annual basis. So there's not a lot in the plan that I think you would say is outsized or not obtainable. We think what we've put in there is extremely achievable. And if you were to look at the threats, a lot of what we do is based on how we reinvest the cash that we have in accounts. Right? So our net interest and what we're able to obtain from reinvesting that. So there is some risk and some sensitivity on that side, but the risk would really come from a prolonged low rate environment, right? Getting back to actually sort of pre or right around financial crisis days, or a prolonged downturn in the financial markets. Right? We don't see that being as a realistic risk, but that's the biggest thing out there that we could see. Otherwise, we believe it's extremely obtainable. In terms of the upside to the plan, sort of harp on the fact that we base this on our core brokerage model that's in play now. So our core active trader segment, together with the expansion that we've had in derivatives, and then some growth in our corporate services channel. But we really haven't added into that any of the potential growth from our digital wealth channel that we've just sort of put back on the map and done a lot of work on over the past year in getting that product set to the right place to go out to our investors with. And we also haven't added in any of the potential growth from the RIA custody side of the business. So we believe there is some embedded upside in the plan that obviously we'll continue to share with you on the successes that we have and what we're able to deliver.
Maybe that's a good segue into the RIA business. Since announcing, you've had some really strong wins. I think you said $12 billion pipeline of assets coming on board. The balances have already grown. Can you just talk about some of the early wins that you've had, the sustainability of bringing those assets on board, and how you think that will contribute to the kind of the growth in client assets over time?
Sure. So when we looked at TCA and we actually signed the agreement and went forward with TCA, they had about $17 billion in assets under custody. Since we closed that deal in April of this past year, we've been able to onboard an additional $1 billion in assets under custody, so that came immediately after the deal, and then $12 billion in signed commitments from a $17 billion base, and those will join us over the next 18 to 24 months. So when we looked at the transaction initially for TCA, we really looked at it as an additional tool for our financial consultants to go after some of the assets and some of the clients that were joining us through our corporate services business. Right? What other things were missing from their ability, or what did they need? What would be helpful for them from both an acquisition and a retention standpoint for those customers? So we knew that that was a sort of a fertile ground for us to really go out and take this platform for a spin. What we didn't see or anticipate as much as we've seen now is the uplift from the brand. Right? Putting E-Trade's brand and moniker behind this platform has had some very nice success early on. We're getting a lot of interest from RIAs, not only those who are underserved, but those who want to join a technology-forward platform with a great service offering. And we're also seeing pretty strong interest from the RIA community. Right? And by that, I mean there are a lot of RIAs out there looking for growth and getting involved with a brand-new referral network where you can open up both our FCs on the retail side for those customers who want additional advisor services. You can open up the stock plan channel accounts that come into the brokerage for those who want additional services. We also take a number of phone calls, as you might imagine, on a daily basis, looking for an advisor. Before we had TCA, we didn't have that put together. And one of the things that was a proof point for me was having an industry stalwart like Edelman come and partner with us to be our lead in the referral program on a national basis. So, just to stay on the referral program for a minute, the way that we've set it up and what we're trying to do, we're not looking to just grow mass scale in this space. We are looking for quality advisors that have been through a due diligence process with us. We're setting up on a local, a regional, and a national basis. And on the local basis, really partnering those RIAs with FCs in that region to make sure that there is a very strong focus on the customer in that region. So everything we've done, including trying to build out the referral network, has really been with a view toward how can we continue to best serve our customers, grow and deepen those relationships, increase wallet share, and strengthen the relationship with E-Trade. So it's early days yet, Will, but very, very pleased with the progress.
Got it. And can you kind of talk about the interplay between that business and the corporate services business and just how you're thinking about driving that retention rate of 15% historically higher over time?
Sure. So like I said in the, sort of earlier on, when I looked at, when the whole company, when we looked at TCA, we have a pool of assets on our corporate services platform that has come to us and that gets refreshed, right, as those plans continue to grant shares and grant equity compensation, which in some cases can be extremely meaningful. As that continues to grow, there's more of an opportunity for us to go out and make relationships and have relationships with those customers. We know that we lose a number of clients who come to us through the stock plan to RIA channels, right? Where do they find those advisors? They talk to their friends. They talk to, the VP down the hall or the individual who already has an advisor. Who do you use to help you manage your money? We will now be, our FCs and our, managed account service team and our executive services team will be in the conversation with the referral network that is available to us on the TCA platform. So I wouldn't say it's the be-all, end-all or we've somehow discovered the secret sauce to drive that 15% higher. We've been speaking about that for quite some time. But we do like the fact that we can give yet another tool to our FCs and to our reps who talk to these, the individuals who've just received a grant or have just had a stock option, become exercisable in terms of helping them find the advice that they want if they want a higher touch service. So that's a big part of why we looked at this.
Got it. And then maybe switching gears to the corporate services side, you've had an extremely successful 2 years in terms of new business wins and new implementations. I guess, can you talk about what's driven some of those market share gains and maybe how much more runway there is to kind of continue that as some of your competitors make changes to their businesses?
Sure. So corporate services has been a pretty big success for us, particularly over the last 2 years as we've really sort of driven the team. But in order to understand the success of corporate services, you need to step back a little bit and think about the days of E-Trade in 2008, 2009, when there was serious crisis around. We invested in two things during that period. One was our brand. The other was Equity Edge Online, which is our stock plan administration business platform. So this was something that we've seen as a competitive differentiator for a very long period of time. And it's always been fairly successful. I mean, we've had the number one platform for the past 7 years now. So we didn't sort of reinvent the platform or put a new product out in the marketplace that somehow drove all this value. What we did do 2 years ago or two-plus years ago was sit down with the management team and help them cut away all of the noise that had existed in their business. So stop trying to be all things to all people and growing the retail side of the stock plan business, right? Stop trying to convert those customers to retail customers. Stop trying to make sure that you guys are the ones providing the education, that you guys are the ones providing the customer service. We have expert teams that can take care of that for you. What we want you all to do is go out and build the plan pipeline as large as you possibly can. Tell us what technology you need. Tell us what improvements to the corporate service side that you need. Talk to us about the implementation teams, right? What are you missing? How much investment do you need? It's yours. Go out and grow. And I think that if you boil it down to one word, it's really focus, right? It's focus from this team, and the results have been pretty outstanding. going from $150 billion in the pipeline of assets that will come to us either through stock vesting or option exercise to $260 billion, right? That's a pretty large jump. The success, nothing makes me prouder than to say, over the course of 2018, we've won 75% of the RFPs that we've been invited to. We weren't invited to just four, so anybody thinks we won three out of four and that was just a lucky win streak, that's not us. We do compete against some of the better players in the space. These are very sought-after plans, and our team has just delivered, and they've delivered consistently. I think it's a service model that works. It's an implementation model that works. Our technology team is involved in every decision that we make, and getting that technology solution right for an HR department or for a chief administrative officer organization to onboard those assets to us and make sure the plan functions well and they have support has just been huge. It has been a period of dislocation, and we've absolutely benefited during that period of dislocation, but this isn't something that I think of as a one-time event. Yeah, there's a little more room to run on sort of the upsized or the number of RFPs. Plans go to RFP on a fairly regular basis. You're talking about three or five-year contracts that end up in a cycle. Our goal on this business is actually twofold. One is to make sure that we continue to invest in the platform, to make sure that we keep the customers who are on us now on the corporate side, and that if we lose a corporate client, we want to know that it was only through an M&A activity where the surviving company had a different sponsor, right? Or had somebody else running their plan. Then to continue to win the RFPs as they roll forward and continue to dominate the space. Absolutely some tailwinds in this space and some one-time opportunities that I believe our team is absolutely taking advantage of.
Got it. I think one of the more underappreciated parts of this business, which you guys highlighted on the most recent call, is just the outsized contribution to the cash balances that it provides to the business. I think that wasn't that well known before you guys called that out. Could you maybe kind of talk about that, how that's trended over time, and maybe what that could contribute to that five-year plan going forward?
Sure. Corporate services has always been a big part of our business and a competitive differentiator for us. Our business is, as we've talked about a little bit, it's driven a lot by cash in client accounts, right? The investment that we can make from those accounts and the investment income that we can generate. The profile of the corporate services client is a bit different than our average retail client. They do tend to have a greater proportion of cash in their accounts, whether that be through dividends that they've received, through stock exercises, where they're just looking for what they should be doing next with their money. They're looking for an advisor, or they have the cash in the account, it comes through a corporate channel, and it stays there. The corporate services channel, as we've shown the light on lately, drives about a little bit more than 35% of our overall cash balances. Just during the last 2 years, those cash balances have grown from $17 billion to $21 billion. We would actually anticipate that that outsized sort of growth continues and that 35% may actually increase a bit over time just because of the behavior within those accounts. It is a very large part of our plan go forward, which is why we thought it was about time that we started shining a real light on this business to show you all why I was so excited about this and why I talk about it on every earnings call whenever I get the opportunity. Because it is real for us, and it's extremely meaningful in terms of driving assets, accounts, and growth. A big part of what we do. It also, as many of you have seen with the massive amounts of net buying that have taken place in the industry, right, whenever there's a market dip or particularly over the last 2 years, the amount of net buying, this business has almost a hedge or an anti-weight, if you will, against that cash burn. This has actually allowed us to maintain relatively steady cash balances while others in the industry have really watched their cash balances diminish. It's a big part of who we are. It's absolutely a big part of the plan, and we will continue to talk more intelligently to give you more details around the stock plan business going forward, right? This will be a part of our calls. We will continue to give you more details and more in-depth analysis as we go forward.
Got it. Maybe switching gears over to the retail side of the business. You guys obviously made progress in growing the managed accounts. You hit your target in 3Q. Can you just talk about the progress you've made on some of those offerings? You touched on it briefly earlier, and just how you're thinking that can contribute to growth targets going forward.
Sure. Over the last 2 years, as Will just pointed out, and as you all know, we were very heavily focused on our active trader business and on the growth of the derivative side of our business, really to reestablish ourselves as one of the leaders in the space. I believe the focus, the team effort, the technology builds that we did, the integration of Options House, the onboarding of all of those tools and services, the building out of the appropriate teams to help manage those accounts, right? You can see the results in our results of what we've been able to drive. In parallel to that, we've also established and sort of grown some pretty nice tools on the digital wealth side, right? Starting with our robo-advisor, our what we call our core portfolios, our pre-built ETF offering that allows you to build a series of ETFs based on risk tolerance, all the way up to our managed account solutions where, our investment team will design a portfolio on a managed basis, for you independently when you want that level of service. So those tools are there. What we haven't done a good job of over the last 2 years is really packaging that the right way and moving it into our customer base and letting the world know that we have these investing solutions, that it's a very nice digital wealth experience, that they're easy to use, they're simple. The balances, I believe, the low balance or the minimums are at the right levels. And we can really help you even with things like, thematic investing, right, which is one of the latest things that we've rolled. But we haven't marketed it. We haven't packaged it. And that's the area, well, in terms of growth, robo and the digital wealth space that we expect to see some good returns in, and we haven't built a lot of that into the plan. So we haven't marketed it and really used it as a tool or given it as an offering to our stock plan administration customers. So yet another tool in the toolbox for that financial consultant or for us to market directly to those customers to talk about our digital wealth offering. Being more well known for other than just trading and getting known a little bit more for the investing side, right? So we do think there's untapped growth and untapped potential. And obviously with all of the new market entrants and the ease of use and the one or two clicks to get your money invested, you have to be in that space. So we think digital wealth is a big part of our growth story go forward.
Got it. Makes sense. And then I guess on the 3Q call, you talked about some of the more transactional banking capabilities that you'd like to invest in. Can you just kind of talk about some of those initiatives, why that's an important initiative for E-Trade?
So it comes as a surprise to some when we talk about it, but we're a bank. Right? We've been a bank for a very long period of time. We have traditional banking services available. So we have a very good deposit account, checking account. We have our premium savings account, bill pay. We've launched some additional products through our banking channel that we've had some success in. There's been some nice uptake on our premium savings side, and also our securities-based lending that we run from the bank has had some nice uptake, and we've just lowered the minimums on that to be able to offer that to more of our customer base. So we've had some early success. What we haven't done, very similar to the digital wealth side, is package our bank offering in an appropriate way. For a very long time, particularly given our regulatory relationships after the financial crisis and through the implementation of Dodd-Frank, our bank was in the background. It had to be. We couldn't grow it. We actually got rid of all of the deposit accounts over a period of time, and we didn't want it there. But now when you look at the new market entrants and how easy they are to use from a digital perspective, we are a bank. We have that offering. We've always been digitally centric. We're the original disruptor in the space. So we need to get back to that on the bank side, and that's something that we're actively working on, because you can see that relationship with a bank, and we've done the analysis on our own customers, when you have that banking relationship with E-Trade, you have more assets, you do more trades, you're less likely to attrite or leave us over time, and we have a lot more of your share of wallet. So we're very enthusiastic about what we can do on the bank side, and we think it's pretty easy for us to compete in this space. It's really getting the right platform, the right look and feel together, packaging it correctly, and going out and competing on something we should be winning on already.
That makes sense. I guess, could you talk more competitively about the retail business, what you're seeing in terms of some of the new entrants on the free trading side, J.P. Morgan's entrant, Robinhood has been there for a while. How you're thinking about the new entrants and maybe how it relates to the pricing environment as well.
Sure. On the new market entrants, we've all seen them sort of come into the space, and what I take away is we live and continue to live in a very competitive environment, right? The space that we operate in and that we work in every day is extremely competitive. You need to have a compelling offering. You need to have a site that's easy to use, and end of the day, it really boils down to customer experience and your user interface. How do you make sure that first interaction with E*TRADE is a pleasant one, and there's no difficulty in doing what you want to do, whether it's on a mobile, web, on your iPad, right? That's where you need to be. When I look at some of the new market entrants, I think that's what they do very well. As a disruptor ourselves, we need to continue to monitor and look at those offerings. What can we learn from them? What can we do better, right? How do we make sure that we keep ourselves in the consideration set for the investors who are either, you know, new coming in, or those traders who are new to market, or the, you know, the folks who have just had an IRA roll over for the first time and they wanna understand how to do it themselves? How do you keep yourselves in that decision set? That's one thing we learned from the new market entrants. When I look at what, you know, JPMorgan's done on the YouInvest platform, you know, if you want a, you know, a bundled offering and sort of simplistic trading capabilities, I think that's there. I mean, we were very excited to sort of see this product come to life. They talked about it, I think it was back in June 2016 was the first time they mentioned it. Anytime JPMorgan speaks or has the assets that they have to put behind things, you have to listen, right? You have to take a look at what it is that they've put together and what it is they're coming to market with. But we don't see that as a competitive offering for us at this stage. We've seen a lot of, whether it be investment banks or commercial banks, come into our space over time. They have some very nice offerings, but they tend to look at different customer sets and different pools, and we don't look at them as a primary competitor. So I think overall we're in a highly competitive environment, and I still believe that we have a compelling offering. Our customers show us every day by interacting with us. We operate in an environment where we give best execution, right? Price improvement. Our pricing is extremely transparent. People know what they're getting and what they're paying for what they're getting. So I think that offering resonates with individuals once they get away from sort of a low balance account and one or two trades, and they want a real service offering. They want a real education offering. That's something that, you know, people are still willing to pay for, particularly when you're talking about something in a $5 to $7 price range. We do monitor new entrants. We absolutely listen when folks like JPMorgan, you know, come to the stage and start talking. But, you know, we'll continue to learn from them and continue to, you know, advance our platforms better.
Got it. And then I guess on the trading environment more broadly, I mean, there's been an extremely strong kind of engagement levels over the past 2 years. Yeah. And you've actually outperformed some of your peers, you know, in terms of not just kind of riding the wave, but actually deepening some of the penetration on the active trading side. I guess when you look at the current environment, how would you kind of gain the sustainability of current client engagement levels and just relate that kind of more broadly to how you're thinking about it going forward?
So it's definitely been a very engaged last 2 years. So and we have participated and some of the tailwinds have been there for us. But what I'm impressed by is the way that the team responded, the way that we were able to turn out the tools and the functionality and the service offering that clients wanted, particularly during this period of market volatility and when they were, you know, putting a lot of assets into the marketplace to have that available to them so that they transact, you know, with E*TRADE and we're looked at as their financial partner. So I think that's been extremely important. You know, as I talked about in the plan, we don't foresee this level of activity, you know, continuing. We think it's been somewhat outsized, but what really pleases me about what we've been able to do was grow our accounts by 11%, and more importantly, how we define our more value or our high value accounts by over 25%. So you talk about the derivatives offering and what we've been able to do in terms of our active trader base. We've really seen some explosive growth during that period. We expect in our plan to continue to grow on those accounts, but obviously not at the levels that we've experienced. We do see some, you know, some moderation, and we've definitely recognized that in the plan we sent to the board.
Got it. Earlier this week, you recently announced some changes to the management team, giving Mike Pizzi new responsibilities on the technology side, elevating Chad Turner to the role of CFO. Can you talk about the thought process behind some of those changes and how you see them kind of impacting the organization more broadly?
So I think it's the easiest way to talk about Mike Pizzi is actually to think about what we talked about on stage just now. Digital wealth offering, right, and what we're talking about, sorry, the digital investing or wealth investing that we've talked about. We talked about the banking products. We've talked about ease of use and customer centricity and making sure the customer experience is excellent, making sure that you're there for your customer at all times, that that interaction is seamless and simple and easy. All of that boils down to a technology platform that has to be best in breed and best in class. And, by the way, we constrain ourselves through the lens of an operating margin framework when we do our budgeting and we expense and we do our new investing. We don't hamstring ourselves ever in terms of our technology spend or our operations spend. Those need to be running full steam, and they need to be the most efficient operations that we can have. When I moved operations to Mike a couple of months back and put him sort of overseeing the operational efficiency program that we have ongoing within the firm, the results that I started to see and the ideas and the manner of thinking that was coming out of that were pretty spectacular. So when you have the need for a phenomenal technology platform coupled with operational efficiency, and you need that run in a manner that allows you to deliver results extremely quickly, and you look to your bench of players, you're not going to put your third string quarterback in. You're going to take a look at your top guy, and you're going to challenge him to deliver. This is a gentleman who has delivered from his days all the way in our trading function as a treasurer, coming through and being our chief risk officer, becoming probably, in my view, and I do know one or two of them, the best chief financial officer in our space, extremely strong, well-respected by the community. So giving him technology to pair with operations and drive that forward in a meaningful way within the operating margin framework that he built just made a heck of a lot of sense to me to win. Right? When you want to win, you go with your best player. And that's exactly what I've done with Mike. Now, he will still oversee the finance function. Many of you have not yet come to meet Chad Turner or get to know Chad Turner. Chad's been with us for over 14 years. He's been in the industry for over 20 years. Most recently, he ran our FP&A function. Very close with the business, understands the business as well as anybody who actually runs the business. I put Chad up against anyone in that respect. And very pleased that he will, take on that role as CFO under, under Mike's guidance and tutelage. Now, it's a lot to put on, on Mike Pizzi and have in one organization. But if there's anybody who can, sort of handle that and run that, it's Mike. So it's a move toward winning. It's a move toward, really taking the company forward in a meaningful way to drive at the plan that Mike helped design. And it's having, winning in both technology, operations, and keeping that finance function pristine. Right? Chad is an extremely strong player, but as you might imagine, in our finance function built under Mike Pizzi and one or two before him, we have a very deep bench. So this doesn't, I think it's a great move for the company. It's a great move for Chad.
Just in the last couple of minutes, see if there's any questions from the audience. If not, I can keep going.
Yeah, there we go. If we ever get another round of trade commission pricing cuts in the industry, can you talk a little bit about how much of that falls to the bottom line or whether you guys have specific expense line items you think could offset some of that?
So, look, this is always a topic that we talk through and think about. Absolutely, we continue to see, and even in our model, we built in some pressure on our commission for trade line, going forward. But the way I see that is more pressure coming from the negotiated rate side. I think, and I believe our whole company thinks, when we look at the value that a customer who trades with us receives today, and all folks who are trading out in the industry, in terms of execution quality, in terms of service delivery, in terms of the education offering, right? Everything they have is an unbelievable bundle of value when they interact with you, particularly at a $5 to $7 price point. So before I answer your question specifically, I would say that price cutting to me on that rack rate line did nothing in 2010 to redistribute that account or change the numbers or percentages in terms of what each of the brokerages had at that point. Same thing in February of 2017, we didn't see any reallocation. Our core traders and customers like the platform they're on. We continue to invest in it and continue to build it for them. Now, if there was a move in the marketplace that took that rack rate down to a lower level, we'd do what we did last time. We'd evaluate it, we'd listen to our customer base, and we'd do what we need to do to protect the franchise. And in answering your question, right, there's, for each dollar price cut down, it's about a $50 million hit in revenue for us. We do see that a bit offset on both the derivative side, which bears some different trades, and also through our corporate services channel. We have sort of pricing components that are baked in there that are a little bit less rate sensitive in terms of those customers, but it's on that portion. And when you look at our overall model, the commissions line shrinks more and more as we go out into the future. So a buck for 50, I think, is the way to think about it.
Well, with that, join me in thanking Carl for his time today.
Thank you all.